us. I'm going to turn to Mark chapter 7. We want to deal with verses 31 through 37. I'll take a moment to pass this out. Your Bible probably doesn't show it completely, but this is a map of kind of where Jesus is at as we're going through Mark at the moment. You're welcome. This is the kind of maps that we had to do. This is the kind of maps we had to do when I was in Bible. Debbie and I had to do when I was in Bible college. Oh, you chair. All right. Called the Footsteps of Jesus, as you see this. And the reason why I wanted to share that with you this morning, so you kind of see what Jesus was doing and where he was going, and it goes from number 1 all the way up there to down to 12. This was his Galilean, what is called his Galilean ministry. And the last, and during his third year of his ministry. So you see all the places that he went to. But now if you'll notice the map there, as we come to our text this morning, Jesus and the 12 leave the region of Tyre. Okay? And it's kind of odd, kind of people might think it's kind of odd what he does, because he kind of goes, makes it like a circuitous route as such. People say that's really odd. To do that way, because where he goes up near Sidon, which is 20 miles north of Tyre. And then he comes back down. He proceeds to come back down and go east toward the Decapolis region. And now they have made their way, by the time we come to our text this morning, they have made their way to the Decapolis region. It's still the summer of 29 AD. But it's getting close to autumn. In all this time period, scholars estimate that what Jesus did in all this time period, he spent 8 months doing this. So he spent 8 months with the 12. Teaching, healing, feeding crowds. But now it's getting near to autumn. It's still summer. It's late summer of the year. And it's here where one might say that an unusual healing takes place. It's also interesting that Mark is the only one of the gospel writers that relate this particular healing that Jesus did. Matthew doesn't talk about it. Luke doesn't talk about it. John doesn't talk about it. Mark's the only one. So I want us to turn to the text and see what we can glean from it this morning. And remember, last week we talked about Jesus healing a Gentile's woman's daughter, a Syrophoenician's daughter. I was just thinking about that in what today is, Happy Mother's Day. They say this is Mother's Day. It's designated as Mother's Day. And just thinking about that when you think about what we were reading last week, about that mother, she's a Gentile. She heard about what Jesus had done, and she comes to him. Why does she do that? Again, because of her love for her daughter. That's showing mother love. And that's what she did. And what she said at the end, all she wanted was the crumbs under the table. Because she was a Gentile. And as soon as she said those things, her daughter was healed. And Jesus didn't even have to go there. He listened to her. And he healed her daughter, and she's a Gentile. So once again, what we come to this morning in this text is that Jesus is still among the Gentiles. So as we turn to the text and see what we can glean from it this morning, I'm going to read the whole thing, then we'll unpack it. Beginning with verse 31. Again, he went out from the region of Tyre and came through Sidon. See this? You follow that on the map. You see that? He came through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee within the region of Decapolis. They brought to him people of that region. They brought to him one who was deaf and spoke with difficulty. And they implored him to lay his hand on him. Jesus took him aside from the crowd by himself and put his fingers into his ears. And after spitting, getting saliva on his tongue, he touched his tongue with the saliva. And looking up to heaven with a deep sigh, he said, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And his ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was removed, and he began speaking plainly. And he gave them orders not to tell anyone, but the more he ordered them, the more widely they continued to proclaim it. They were utterly astonished, saying, "He has done all things well. He makes even the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." Now, what we need to see from this is that he wasn't dumb. He was deaf, but he was mute. He had a speech. What the text lays out for us, and what the Greek word actually means there, is that he had a speech impediment. He couldn't speak without difficulty. It wasn't that he was dumb, as some want to say, or as some translated. He was not that. Now, Mark Sice brings out a good observation, and he gives, I think, the best translation. He says that the best translation, and I agree with him, the best translation of verse 31, if you look at verse 31, is found in the Revised Standard Version. And the Revised Standard Version says that Jesus went through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee through the region of the Decapolis. And so by doing so, and this is the point of it, so by doing so, he avoided Galilee itself. But he not only avoided Galilee itself, you understand what he avoided in avoiding Galilee? He avoided all those crowds. All those people. But he's still in Gentile territory. See, it's not true that Jesus didn't care about the Gentiles. As we saw last week, he did have compassion for them. But he came to the house of Israel first, and what he said. But now he's trying to avoid the crowds because what they have done is they have made him into like a three-ring circus. Jesus, you can heal? I got someone to heal that needs healed. Oh, and you can feed us. We don't have to do anything. You can feed us. And that's why they had been coming to him. So he wants to, he's trying to avoid those things because Jesus knows and doesn't want them to think that that's the type of Messiah he is. That that's the type of Christ he is. That he's just to heal, to cast out demons, provide food. The physical things, the fleshly things, the earthly things. And so he's trying to avoid now. He's very intense in wanting to teach his disciples. But notice where Jesus is currently. This is not unfamiliar territory. He's still among the Gentiles. But recall where he's at. Now think about this. He goes a roundabout way, and he comes back to the Decapolis region. If you remember reading in Mark chapter 5, he was there before, was he not? So he comes back there. And what happened there when he was there? Several months before, the people of that region told him to leave. Why? Because Jesus came upon two men who were demon-possessed. And one of them that he talked to said his name was Legion, meaning the demon, the evil spirit, meaning there were lots of them. And what happened? And we know what happened. The head evil spirit asked Jesus, said, well, send us into those swine. So he allowed them, he gave them permission to do that. And they did. Then we all know what happened to the swine, right? They went berserk and went over a cliff and drowned themselves. And the people at that time, they were concerned. Now, these are Gentiles from the Decapolis region. They weren't concerned that these men were in their right, these two men were in their right mind now. What were they concerned about? What happened to our swine? What happened to our pigs? Get out of here. We don't want you around. So they made Jesus go. Yes, because their livelihood was gone. And the people of the Decapolis region then, they didn't want Jesus around because of what maybe something else could happen. So they asked him to leave. Now, before he left, if you read in Mark chapter 5, verse 17 and verse 20, is that the man wanted to, one of the men wanted to follow Jesus, and Jesus said no. He was Gentile. Said no. Did you go back to your family? Tell them what God has done for you. So that's what he did. So when you look at this, again, we ask ourselves questions. Jesus did leave. He went back to Capernaum, then he left Capernaum. Now look what happens. Excuse me. He comes back to the Decapolis region, and the people welcome him. They welcome him back. He's been there before, several months before. You know that they know who he is. More than likely, those two demon-possessed fellows told their family about it. So they were a witness. And now they welcome him. And some some friends of a man come to Jesus. What we see in verse 32, they now want Jesus to heal one of their own, one of their friends. They know Jesus can do it. They want him to. And so what the text tells us here is what the word that is used here, that in fact, they implore him to do so. They plead with him to heal the man. They don't just say, Jesus, you can heal him, heal him. They plead with him. They implore him to do so. And he doesn't. He doesn't say, hey, well, you're... Remember how you treated me before? No, I'm not going to do that. Go away from me. Y'all just go away. I don't want you around. He didn't do that, did he? He didn't ignore him. He grants their request. Now, what the text tells us here is that the man is deaf and he has a speech impediment that he cannot talk. And now here comes the first unusual thing. In verses 33 through 35, you'll notice that. Jesus takes the deaf man, the deaf and mute man, he takes him away from his friends, we don't know where, but somewhere, away privately, by himself. Not around. He doesn't do the healing around his friends and around the people that are there. He takes him by himself. You ever question when you're reading this? You should. Why does he do that? Why wouldn't he just heal him right there, right then? We know he could do it, right? He could have just said, you're healed. He could have just touched the guy, or not even, he didn't even have to really touch him. He could have just healed him right then and there, huh? All around his friends, but he doesn't do that. Why? He takes him off by himself. Again, I think one of the reasons why is because he doesn't want it to be a three-ring circus. That's not why he came. But I think it's also more than that. The text doesn't really tell us, but it does say he took him by himself. Literally, the passage reads this way. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, by himself, he did these things. Now, the New International Version has there in the text. Now, here's the problem I have with that. There is no there. They have there in the text in the New International Version. But there is no there. There's no Greek word for there in the text. In other words, it's not there. They have inserted it there, which they ought not to have done, because it's not there. Thus, it's unwarranted and should not be there. But think about it again. Why would Jesus do that? Mark doesn't tell us. Nor does Jesus give any... Notice this also. Jesus doesn't give any reason to the people that he is doing this. He doesn't say, I'm going to take your friend aside by himself and I'll heal him. He doesn't say anything to them. He grants their request, but he takes the friend aside somewhere away from the people, away from his friends and away from his people. I think perhaps Mark Moore puts it the best. I think that he does this because this privacy will allow Jesus to stir the man's faith. Jesus never does anything without a meaning and without a purpose. As he says, that he will be able to concentrate better without all the movement and excitement of the people around him. And in addition, it will cause less commotion among the crowd. Because at this point in his ministry, what's Jesus trying to do? He's trying to avoid the crowds. He's not trying to, as Mark Moore says, he's not trying to wow them. So, in any case, he takes them aside. Now look at this. The method Jesus uses to heal. Again, think about what we're reading here. As I said before, could not Jesus have instantly healed the man? I believe he could. But instead, notice what he does. He touches the man's ears. He touches the man's ears. He takes saliva. Jesus takes saliva from his own tongue. Now, some of our youngsters, especially, and some even of us older, we might think this is gross. But he puts his fingers in his mouth, in his tongue, like this. He gets saliva off of it. The man opens his mouth, like this, see? And he touches the man's tongue with his saliva. He uses spit. He touches the man's ear. Then it tells us that he looks to heaven and he gives a deep sigh. Like a groan. Why is he doing this? I think it's because what Jesus is using. Remember, this man before him is deaf. He cannot hear. He can't speak either. He has a speech impediment. So why is Jesus doing this? And he groans. And he looks up to heaven. And he said, "Ephphatha." Be open. He speaks in Aramaic. Why? It's for the benefit of the deaf man. If y'all ever been around anyone who is deaf, not like those of us who wear hearing aids, and if without these we're hard of hearing, but we're not completely deaf, if you've been around a deaf person, to communicate with them, what do? You use sign language. I had two cousins who were deaf, and that's how you communicated with them. My cousin Ronnie, he was older than me, he was older than my oldest brother. He's gone now, but that's how Ronnie would, even though he wore a hearing aid, but he was born that way, and so he also could not speak as we do. His speaking was not as what you would call plain. So he went to a particular school, and when he learned sign language, he taught us sign language so that we could understand him, so he could understand us. This is what Jesus is doing. He's being, and this is a Gentile, no less. He is being kind and considerate to the man. That's why he does it. Yes, he could have healed him instantly. He could have touched him and healed him instantly. But what would the man have thought? See? Would not he have been back? Wait. But no, he shows through sign language, in essence, through miming, what he is going to do. Touch his ears. He's letting the deaf man know, I'm going to make you where you can hear. He takes the saliva from his tongue and places it on his tongue and says, you will no longer have a speech impediment. You will no longer not be unable to talk, but you will be able to talk. And he shows him that. And that's why then he looks up to heaven and you can imagine seeing the deaf man. He sees Jesus look up to heaven. So what he's telling the man is, if this is not some magical thing, this is not some circus type thing, this is from God. This is from Yahweh. So that the man knows that. So he looks up to heaven, and then he looks to the guy, and he said, "Ephphatha, be open." Just like that, the guy could hear. And he could talk. That's why Jesus does that. Now, the reason why he used saliva was because in Jesus' day, it was understood to have medicinal properties. And this man would know that. But notice this. I agree with Brother Mark Moore when he says this, that it is only, and you have to think of that about this, this is a Gentile, not a Jew. But you see how Jesus includes even the Gentiles at this early stage. As he says, it is only in connection with the prophecies, sacrifices, and promises of the Old Testament. We need to understand this even today. It is only in connection with the prophecies, sacrifices, and promises of the Old Testament that salvation has its full force for the Gentiles. So the man is healed. Jesus takes him back to his friends. And you see what Jesus tells him? And he imagines telling the guy who was deaf as well, don't say anything. Don't tell anybody. He's healed, but don't say anything. And of course, what do? They spread it all over, don't they? They don't listen to that. They spread the news all over. But here's a point that we need to see. The last part of verse 37. It goes back to and it alludes to a prophecy of Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 35, verses 5 through 6. Notice what it says. He ordered them the more widely they continued to proclaim it. They, his friends, the people around that were there with Jesus, they were utterly astonished, saying, "He has done all things well. He makes even the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." This alludes to Isaiah 35, verses 5 through 6. What does it say? Then the eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf will be unstopped. Then the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute will shout for joy. For waters will break forth in the wilderness and streams in the Arabah. That's a fulfillment of that prophecy of Isaiah. It alludes to that. And notice once again what happens. These are Gentiles, not Jews. Again, the people are astonished. They are astounded, completely astounded by what Jesus did. And you know what? The word that is used in the Greek here that Mark uses, you know what it literally means? They were struck out of their senses. They were struck out of their senses. They were so completely astonished that they couldn't even grasp it. If we were there then, would we have? I don't think so. But get this. How about that? But get this. They still did not know who he really was, did they? They still do not really understand who he is. So there's a lesson in this. As we conclude, And I think there's a valid lesson and a good lesson for us in the church today at this. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jesus did that, the healing in an unusual way as he did. Not just for being kind and considerate to the deaf man as he was, but also to show them. And what many people need to learn today, you cannot build your faith on emotionalism. You cannot build your faith on that. And so many, that's what they are trying to do and what they see in the church assemblies nowadays. It's to build their faith on emotionalism. But emotionalism, brothers and sisters, will not last. What happens when the euphoria? What happens when the euphoria wears off? When you're up on the mountaintop? Some of us have. You ever been to a Christian service camp? Well, there's periods of time during that week where one of the ministers there who's leading the week, leading the campfire and leading the vespers in that, they get us really worked up. And time after time, I've seen youngsters make a decision. Because of that, they're on the mountaintop. Those emotions. I've had family members do that very thing. But then what happens, you see, what happens, brothers and sisters, if you're not grounded in this, what happens that if afterward that euphoria wears off, what happens then? You're not on the mountaintop anymore. You come down. So what happens? And what happens to your faith then? Well, if you're not grounded in the Word and you don't stay grounded in the Word and stay grounded around God's people, that's why it says not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. If you're not, your faith will not last. And I've seen that time after time. Happen. So there's a lesson in this, and that's why I think Jesus does what he does. Again, these were Gentile people, not Jews. So another lesson we learn from this, that even at this stage of his ministry, Jesus included Gentiles. Even though he came to the house of Israel first, he didn't cast them aside. He didn't say, "You're no count. I didn't come for you. Get out of here. I'm just for the Jews, not you. You don't count. You're worthless. I don't have anything to do with you." He didn't do that. He healed some. He included them. So that brings up a final question for us today. Are there people that we think, and are there people who other people think, that Jesus considers of no account, of worthless, of people who think they are beyond, or we think that they are beyond the grace and love of Jesus? No. No. I don't believe we should think so. And if we do, and if we come across people, brothers and sisters, who think that way, my goodness, their thinking needs to be adjusted. Does that mean everyone's going to accept the grace and love of Jesus? No. Because he's given them free will. It's their choice. But we still must offer that to them. The grace and love of Jesus. That agape love that we were talking about this morning. Which means you're seeking the highest good for the other person. good lessons in there for us in that, I believe. Let's stand. We're going to sing the chorus. I think we all know. I don't know if Sherry can play it or not. Or we just sing a cappella. For God so loved the world. Yeah. That's what it's all about, see? And that's what Jesus was showing here.